Welcome to the Real Estate Professional Status Podcast. Join me as I sit down with the tax experts and real estate investors to learn how you can qualify for the real estate professional status and how you can use it to amplify your real estate investments. My name is Usher Fried. Let's get right to it. Welcome to the very first episode of the Real Estate Professional Status Podcast. The reason why I am putting out this podcast is there is not a lot of information out there on it. You could read a couple of blog articles. There are a couple of videos, but not a lot of in-depth information out there. There are a couple of great guides, but even so, a lot of the information is written in very abstract terms, hard to apply to the day-to-day person. It's not so accessible. This podcast is to really make the information accessible, dive deep into the details, and just to give you a fundamental understanding of the status in the tax code and how you could use it to your advantage, and also why you should be cautious and do it in a very responsible way, right? This is not an overnight thing. For some people, actually, it is, because some people don't even realize it themselves that they already qualify. So for those people, you know, like, oh God, I didn't realize. So that would be amazing. But, you know, depending on your job, we'll get into it. You'll see that it's not so simple. All right. So now let's start from the beginning just to explain what is the real estate professional status. What does it accomplish? So I'm not a CPA. We'll start with that. This is my research. I've done all the research I could online. I've spoken to a lot of CPAs, and this is really just to help my clients. I help my clients with cost segregation. I help them accelerate the depreciation out the real estate professional status. Depreciation is limited. It's still very effective depending on the person, but it's limited to passive income, which means if you take depreciation on a building and you take a loss of $1 million, that will only count as a loss against passive income. But if you are making money from a job, your $1 million loss on your building of depreciation will not offset your regular income. But if you are a real estate professional, or if your wife is, and when I say you're a real estate professional, I don't mean just you work in real estate, but you have the official status of being a real estate professional, those losses on that building, that cost seg you did, will work to offset income. And this is how high earners pay little to no tax. They really knock down their taxable income to little to nothing. They definitely lower their tax bracket. Even what they're paying tax on, they're paying a lot less. Right? Instead of paying 37%, they're paying 22% or maybe even 12%. That's what the real estate professional status does. It helps you offset regular income. It's pretty cool. It's pretty powerful. This means that you could be making millions of dollars and essentially not pay anything to taxes if you have enough losses to offset it. But if you don't have the real estate professional status, you will still have to pay taxes on your regular income. All right. So now, how do I get the status, right? So now this status is obviously made for people who are working in real estate. So it only helps people who are legitimately in real estate. Now, what does it mean to be legitimately in real estate? How do you differentiate between people who really work in real estate versus people who do not? So there are rules that officially decide if you check off these boxes, you are in real estate. But as you will see, even if you check off these boxes, you have to do so in a convincing fashion. If you check off these boxes, you are a real estate professional. So what are the rules? So to simplify it, I like to cut this up into four parts. Two parts are necessary, and two parts are optional and help it, right? So what's part number one? In order to be a real estate professional, you need two things: 750 hours in a real trade or business, and you have to spend more time in the real trade or business in real estate over any other job you may have. So if you're working 500 hours a year, a different job, and you are working 750 hours in real estate, so those 750 hours makes rule number one, 750 hours, plus it's more than any time spent in any job. But let's say your work is 800 hours a year and you spend only 750 hours in real estate. So then even though you hit the 750 hours, you lose because you spent more time in another business. So this is the real obstacle that prevents people from getting it. All right, so that makes you a real estate professional. But even if you're a real estate professional, that only gives you the ability to offset it, right? So now this has nothing to do with real estate per se. If you invest in any business, you are either a passive investor or an active investor. What differentiates passive investor from an active investor? Materially participating in that business. Now, if you invest in a business and you materially participate, and we'll get into that in a second, what the rules are for that, then that gets treated as an active business and that income is considered active and its losses are considered active as well. But in real estate, there's this 750 hours and 50% more time than in any other business that blocks that from just transferring into an automatic active business, right? So step one is becoming a real estate professional. And then that allows you to go ahead and treat your real estate just like any other business, meaning that if you materially participate, you are good to go. It becomes an active business. But if you do not materially participate, just like any other business you have that you're invested in, if you're not materially participating, that income is going to be passive. So we get the 750 rules, more than 50% of your time spent in real estate, plus you got to do what you always have to do, materially participate. So now 750 hours. What counts and what doesn't count. We're going to get into the details via speaking with the CPAs, but I'm going to go through the list with you just so that you should know what officially counts and what doesn't. So there are 11 activities: development and redevelopment, construction and reconstruction, buying and converting properties, renting or leasing properties, operating and managing properties, and brokerage. So again, development and redevelopment, construction and reconstruction, buying and converting properties, renting or leasing properties, operating and managing properties, and brokerage. Right? So those are 11. If you're a real estate broker, you shouldn't have an issue. If you're in construction, you shouldn't have an issue. Now, these hours will count, but you have to own the business, meaning, if you are in construction, but you're on a W-2 and you don't own any part of the business, those hours won't count. You have to at least own 5% of the business. If you own 5% of the business and it's a real trader business, one of the 11 we just mentioned, all of your minutes, hours count towards becoming a real estate professional. Now, they don't necessarily count towards materially participating in your rentals. That is something that you have to do separately, and we're about to get into that right now. Right? So material participation, like I said, it's not limited to real estate. It's any business that you are invested in, if it's considered an active that you're participating, the way the IRS decides that is by one of these 7 rules, right? Only 5 of them really apply to real estate. So we're just going to go through those. And then again, this is just high level. We're not going to get into the nitty-gritty. So the easiest rule is, when I say easiest to understand and the most clean, let's just say, is the 500-hour rule. It's actually quite hard. It's 500 hours spending in a property, working, materially participating, doing renovations, doing anything that is essential to having it rented out and collecting rent. Collecting rent is counted as well. So that's 500 hours participating in your rental. That will make you materially participating officially and will make the income and losses count as active or non-passive. Rule number 2. Is substantial involvement. If you, again, this becomes gray, if you spend more time than anyone else and there's no one else that's even close to the amount of hours you spent, then you're good to go. That's rule number 2. So it's not a per hour rule. It's not black and white. It's gray. It's that you spent almost all the time in it. Nobody else really spent close to as much time as you. People don't love that rule just because it's gray. Might as well get the 500-hour rule or the next rule, which is 100 hours plus more than anyone else. So if you spend 100 hours in your property and you could prove that nobody else spent more time than you, then you win also. So it could be 200 hours, right? So let's say you can't get the 500-hour rule. If you get the 500-hour rule, you're good to go. Just have to prove, document that you got 500 hours, and then you're fine. But if you don't get the 500 hours, you only got 200 hours, not all is lost, right? Either if you could show that nobody else really spent any time in it, so then you win. Or if you just could show that someone spent less, if somebody did you did 200 hours and then the next person did only 150, you show logs of the people that were working on your property that might have been a managing company, potentially cleaners, any of these people, you go ahead and you show the time log that these people worked a lot less. And, you know, you should always try to have proof if you can to make your case as strong as it possibly can, then you'll win, right? So there's the 500 hour rule. There's the substantially all participation rule, the 100 hours plus more than anyone else. And then I'm going to skip rule number 4 and go to rule number 5. Rule number 5 is that maybe this year you didn't, but 5 out of the last 10 years you did. So, which is great for once you get to a certain stage, you don't have to worry about every single year. As long as 5 of the last 10 years you materially participated, you're good to go. Now, it's going to be more complicated because you're going to have to prove those 5 years instead of just proving your 1 year, but you'll be good to go. 6, we're going to skip. And then number 7 is, even if you didn't hit any of the rules, if somehow you could show and prove that this is a legit business for you and you materially participated, then you win as well, right? So that's the vaguest of them all. So you want to try to stay away from that one. You have rule number 1, 500 hours. Rule number 2, substantially all. You know, it's funny because let's say you did 80 hours and somebody did like 0. Nobody really did anything besides you. And then you have rule number 3, 100 hours plus more than anyone else. And then you have 5 out of the last 10 years. And then you have the vaguest of them all, that if you could just show, you know, you could somehow show without any hitting any of the boxes. It's like, oh yeah, this guy obviously materially participates. He wins, right? So we're going to ask CPAs about all these rules. You know, we got to delve into them. What counts? What doesn't count? What is substantially all? Do they have any cases that number 7 applied? How complicated is number 5 to defend an audit? We're going to get into that. But for this, we just want to know the rules so we have a basic understanding. All right. So those are the basics to becoming a real estate professional and turning your real estate investment into a non-passive investment. Becoming a real estate professional and then materially participating. Now, if you have a job, quite hard to work 750 hours plus spend more time in real estate versus your job, especially if it's a full-time job, right? So if you're a doctor, if you're a high earner, that you do not have time to spend in real estate and show that you spent more time in real estate than your job. So you're sort of toasted. Best way for you is to, let's say, start investing in real estate. And then when you get to a certain point where you have a nice portfolio where the income is coming, that you could maybe start reducing hours at your job, then you could start working on it. But on the onset, if you're just jumping in, it's not going to work unless you're married. Why? Because if you are married, your wife could officially be the real estate professional. If you are married and you are filing jointly, only one of you has to be a real estate professional in order to turn your real estate investments into non-passive investments or active investment, right? So if you're single, you're toast. But if you are married, your wife could do it or your husband could do it and you could stay in your regular job. So what a lot of high earners do, their spouse is interested in real estate and likes it, so they'll go ahead, they'll spend time working, you know, looking at the properties, being in charge of the renovations, collecting the rent, and then that might pay them a really, really high salary just by not paying the taxes on their income. The spouse move is a great move if you could do it. First of all, you need a spouse, and second of all, there has to be somewhat of an interest in real estate. Otherwise, it's going to be pretty hard. Important to note when you are trying to get the real estate professional status and you're married, some of the hours you could chip in, some of the hours you cannot chip in. What do I mean? Like I mentioned, there are two parts. There's the 750-hour rule, and then there's having to materially participate. So the 750-hour rule is something that has to be done by one person. So even if your spouse is doing it, you're married, you cannot help her or him chip in with doing some of those hours. But let's say your spouse does get the 750 hours. Let's say they are a broker, and now you just need to materially participate in your rental. So for example, you're hitting the 500-hour test. There, by materially participating, you could do 250 hours and your spouse could do 250 hours. You could chip in hours when it comes to materially participating, but you cannot chip in hours when it comes to getting the 750 hours. And that's for the spouse rule. The second rule is that really, to materially participate, you have to participate in each rental, right? So if you have five rentals and you materially participated 500 hours in one of them, so then just that property is considered to have materially participation. So that's great for that one property, but you want to use all five properties' losses to offset your income. Let's say you have five properties and you spent 200 hours in one, 200 hours in another. If you're looking for rule number one of 500 hours, then you didn't really materially participate in any of them, right? It's pretty tough, especially if you own real estate all over the country. How are you going to spend enough time in each property to get this status of material participation? So there's something called the grouping election, and it's something that your accountant does on your tax returns and basically groups all the properties into one property. So basically, instead of having five different properties and looking at them in an isolated way, the grouping election allows you to put all of them together and look at them as basically like it's one entity. So even if you only spend 500 hours in one of the properties, all of the properties get approved for material participation. There are downsides to this, very little, but there are downsides to this. So again, all of this whole podcast is to be a conversation starter to give you research and information so you could go ahead and use this to speak to your CPA and try to find out what's the best move for you. There's not a lot of information out there, and even a lot of CPAs don't seem to know all the rules. So here we go. We're going to interview the CPAs that specialize in real estate, that know the rules. Super excited to get this off the ground. Let's go.